Welcome, everyone, into the B-Section Podcast, brought to you by The Morning Times and The Daily Review. I'm Kirk Loveson, along with Logan Hill, David Goff, and Johnny Williams back this week for some NFL stuff. But before we get into all that, it's a jam-packed episode, and we want to start off with what's most important always. Let's start right in the Valley. We had an Athens-Sayre showdown. David, you were there. Talk to us about what's been going on.
Yeah, it was a Saturday morning first pitch, 11:30, which, I mean, it's barely morning, but it is. But I wasn't really...
Depends who you ask.
Yeah. I like to sleep in on noon on Saturdays if I can, so it was early for me. But classic. It was an absolute classic game between two rival schools in the Valley. And the first time they played each other 9 days earlier, it was 20-4 Athens. Turns out if Sayre plays a cleaner ball game, they have a chance to win a bunch more games. Because that first game, that 20-4 game, Sayre had two errors on the first two plays of the game. And then Will Crossett, the starting pitcher for Sayre, was tagged with 7 unearned runs in that first inning. So Sayre just didn't have a shot, really, to come back and win that game. As long as Athens played a competent game, which they did. This one, you could tell from the outset that Sayre was on their game a bit more. It was a close game. But Athens did have 2-0 leads and 4-2 leads. Sayre came back to tie it both times, 2-2 and 4-4. The game went into extra innings. In the eighth inning, Sayre had 2 runs to take their first lead of the game, 6-4. And Athens responded in the bottom of the eighth with 2 runs of their own, had a runner on second with 2 outs. Nick Jacob at the plate chopped the ball back to the pitcher, Will Crossett, who makes a nice play on the ball, but throws a little wild to first base, where Carter Green grabs it off the bag, kind of down the foul line left of first base. So he had to come back in and reach and tag Nick Jacob before he got to first base to end the inning. And there wasn't a call initially. And at that point, Eli Chapman of Athens had scored. And if the umpire was going to rule safe, the infield umpire was going to rule safe, game over. Athens went 7-6. I heard someone in the Athens portion of the crowd yell, "Interference!" Which wasn't accurate, but they did. But the infield umpire ruled safe, and Sayre had frustration, obviously, and the home plate umpire, in a minute or so, decided to overrule the call. Out. Game continues. So 6-6 going to the ninth inning, and Athens goes to the bottom of the ninth, still tied 6-6. And Will Crossett, who was the last batter for Sayre in the top of the ninth inning, with 2 runners on base and 2 outs, struck out looking. His coach admitted he took that into the bottom of the ninth on the mound. He walked the first two guys he faced there and then gave up a hit. So there was bases loaded and nobody out for Athens. Looked like it was going to be a walk-off win for them. Just, you know, by chance, it seemed like it was going to happen. Mound as it happens, Crossett strikes off the next two guys and gets a fly out to center to extend the game. I talked to him after the game. He said how exhilarating of a moment that was for him to get out of a jam like that. And in the top of the 10th, Sayre scores 2 runs. Aiden Ennis had the big go-ahead 2-run hit. And then Will Crossett, who pitched 6.1 innings of relief in this game, and outside of the 8th and 9th innings, was spectacular. Had a 1-2-3 bottom of the 10th, stress-free, and Sayre came away with their biggest win of the season. So it was
a game.
Phenomenal game. It was 3 hours, 10 innings. And I know last week we were talking about an extra inning game that Logan had thought that it was possible that the 10th inning would have a runner on second. To start those innings, it was just normal baseball.
Just straight-up baseball.
Yeah. That was softball. Maybe the rules are different.
Got it.
But, yeah, it was fascinating because I had the idea of possibly, you know, covering this game fully and then just going to – there was a couple of different things going on in the afternoon at Tioga and at Waverly and at Sayre and Athens softball we're playing at Riverfront Park. So maybe going to take some photos somewhere, but that game took long enough that it was –
So in terms of this matchup, what do you think's closer to reality, the 20-4 win or the 10-inning?
Oh, I would say the 10-inning one. I think Athens is a better team overall than Sayre is, but Sayre obviously has the talent, and Charlie Havens, the Athens head coach, said after the game that was probably the best game of the season. He was like, it's hard to be upset about it, but we're going to be because we left bases loaded and nobody out.
So but, a clean, yeah, what I'm taking from it is a clean game from Sayre. They can pretty much hang.
But, Havens said it's like, we knew they had talent the first time we played them. Right now, it just showed that game. Whereas, I think both teams had 3 errors in the game compared to 2 early errors in that first game for Sayre. If Sayre just has a decent defensive day, they're in it. And the day before that, Logan was at this game against Canton where Canton was down, or Sarah was down 13-7 in the seventh inning. And then Sarah scored four runs and had the game time run come up to the plate. So they battled. They're not
going away.
What are we looking at
this
here?
This is the first thing on my list, but it's cool, David.
It's all ties into Sarah baseball, man.
David beats Logan to the punch.
But yeah, and so yeah, that was, okay. I mean, that was the best game of the season so far. And I mean, I haven't seen what Logan has seen. Right. Awesome. Yeah, that was the best game I've seen. And then I don't know if we want to jump into my other really good game of the week. But
if somehow this overlaps with something I have,
if you take another one,
I don't think it will.
That's why I'm saying
I don't believe you've covered New York in the last several weeks. Waverly Softball. They are, as head coach Brent Doan has called them, the cardiac kids, because they have come back from a lot of early deficits, and they have won. Now, two games where they are down 6-0. Yeah, they've won. that was a complete sentence.
So are they just slow starters?
I don't really know what it is, but the game I was at last Thursday against Owego, they're down 6-0. This is the funny part, is I was at this Waverly Owego game on Wednesday, and Owego was up 6-0 in the third inning, and I had left in that third inning. Turns out 5 minutes later, the game was delayed and suspended because of the rain. And I texted the coach, Brent Doan, that night. I was like, so what's kind of the deal? Are you restarting that game at some point? Or are you going from when the game last ended? And he said, we're going to restart the game in the third inning whenever we can. Turns out it was the next day and they restarted the entire game. And still, Waverly was down 6-0 again 24 hours later.
Ball don't lie.
That's what I was going to say. So they restarted the game from the beginning. What happened to those six runs the opponent had just scored? They just said those don't count?
The game never happened.
Just washes.
That's crazy.
Yeah. That is crazy. I guess New York, I don't know exactly how it compares to Pennsylvania conferences, but like the Southern Tier Athletic Conference has its own set of rules compared to probably other conferences in New York. I don't know. I don't really understand it. I'm sure Owego was kind of frustrated to have to restart that entire game, but they were still up 6-0 even quicker the next day. And Olivia Robinson, the pitcher for Waverly, gave up 6 hits, and I think there was a couple errors in there in those first 2 innings for Waverly. But yeah, she gave up 6 hits in those first 2 innings. She gave up 6 more hits the remaining 5 innings. And Owego stranded a lot of base runners in those last 5 innings of the game. So Olivia Robinson was able to battle and keep Waverly in it. And in the fourth inning, Waverly finally gets on board. A bunch of different things happen. Nothing totally noteworthy on offense, except for Megan Apgar was 3 for 3 with 2 doubles and a RBI single. So she had a big day offensively. But an error in the bottom of the sixth from Owego gave Waverly its go-ahead run to make it 7-6. And Waverly held on with runners on base again in the top of the seventh. So it was an impressive comeback win. They were down 6-0 against another team earlier this year, won that game 14-12. They were down 3-0 at a game I was at and led 7-3, then was down 8-7, then led 10-8, and then lost 13-12, something like that. So those games are wild. Waverly softball games are wild.
Yeah, get out to one of those if you haven't yet. Sounds like a heck of a 6 inning. So anything else on the Morning Time side, David?
Nothing as noteworthy as those two games. Right. I've been to a couple of Athens Astera baseball games outside of that, and actually an Athens baseball game as well, Athens softball game out last Friday. And I don't know if Logan wasn't there, so I don't know if he's going to touch on it, but shout out to Aaliyah Johnson of Tawanda. I was at the Tawanda Athens softball game on Friday, and Tawanda won that game 11-2. Aaliyah Johnson had 2 home runs and 5 RBIs.
All right. Yeah, so obviously a big week for you in terms of nail-biter games, just a kind of a thing of what's to come the rest of this season. Logan, take us to the Daily Review. What do you got going on?
Finally, contests are starting to happen. The weather is kind of cooperating.
The weather's cooperating,
so
yeah.
David already alluded to it, and that's where I'll pick up. Sarah Canton last Friday night was a great game. It was 13-7. It was 13-7, 13-6 going into the top of the seventh. Canton, Hudson Ward took over in relief and had just been out there the whole way. He was dealing. He was having a good day on the mound. He gets 2 outs on the board, and then things get sticky. Just one by one, Sarah gets breaks, whether it's an error in the field, whether it's a walk, just getting guys on base, bringing guys around. They're chipping away, chipping away, chipping away, to the point where the tying run is at the plate. And they just, Hudson had gone over his pitch count, so they cycled through another couple of guys, and it was like, oh my gosh, is Canton just going to blow this game? Because they had just been, it had been back and forth, but really since the early innings, they had just kind of been in front the whole way, and they can just flat out hit sometimes.
You had texted me well before that rally that it was like 12-4 or something like that.
It was like, oh, it was okay. Five. That might have been softball.
No, you texted me both scores. Both of them were bad scores.
It got tied 5-5 in like the second inning, and then Canton used a run to take a big lead. And I was like, okay, this is how. And that's what they did in the first game that they played Sarah this year. So I was like, okay, maybe that's just how this one's going to go.
Right.
So Canton's able to finally get that last out it needs. It cycled through two pitchers in that last inning to find the guy that was just going to get the job done. They get the last out. And talking to their coach, Ben Rubert, all they do is play close games. They actually had a 5-4 win last night out in Kalinowski Valley. So all this Canton team does is play close games, but they're around the top of the league, I think 8-3. So they just find a way to get it done, and it doesn't matter. You talk to different coaches. I remember talking to NEB's coach, Brian Salzman. Canton's scrappy. I feel like scrappy is one of the best compliments you can get as a baseball team. They find a way to push runs across. They find a way to get it done in the tough spots. So they're winning by making the plays they need to make, right? Troy baseball is just flat-out mashing. Flat-out mashing. They had a doubleheader with Wellsboro on Thursday. They won both games 12-2 in five innings.
Wow.
Then they went down to Shamokin on Saturday. They won the first game, I believe it was 18-5. Second game was 27-3.
Just offensive juggernaut.
So what's that? Like almost 100 runs in four games or something like that. Wow. And then they cooled off a little bit, but they still come up and they beat Athens 5-1 yesterday.
Who was the starting pitcher in that game?
Cameron Harwick.
Okay.
A gem from him. Three hitter through five innings.
And he had a big showing against Wellsboro in the first game.
Got some arms too.
Yeah, they have Reed Palmer is a freshman. He's been a really, surprising is not the right word, but he's really made a contribution already. And as a freshman, that's not always expected.
Yeah. I know he had a three hit day against Athens and also had a 1.1 inning save in that game.
Then they also, against Wellsboro, they were using the bullpen up because they had a doubleheader coming up on Saturday, so Trevin Terriberry and Joseph Fry also get in. But they just can flat-out hit, and they're aggressive on the base pass. They've got some speed. So they got a lot of guys, and Coach Lyle Wesneski, I was telling David yesterday because he talked to him after the game, you need a quote, ask him a question.
He's your guy.
He will give you everything you need, even if you don't ask for it. It's awesome to talk
reporter's
to
dream.
Yeah, exactly.
I asked him, initial thoughts on the win? It was a minute and a half response. I
love it. That's a reporter's dream.
I love it.
So, I mean, other than that, I wasn't there, but Towanda played down at South Williamsport Baseball yesterday. They beat them 5-0. Really good win for this Towanda team that's kind of been getting on the verge of getting back into the win column, but hasn't quite got there yet. They lost to Montgomery over the weekend. To go down and beat one of the more buttoned-up teams in District 4 at South Williamsport, 5-0.
5-0 feels nice.
Jack
Devaney,
7 innings pitched.
Yeah.
Just That's a good way to get the job done. They're actually going to play today, Wednesday, when we're taping this. They're playing Wyalusing, so
all right,
Cross River rivalry game.
There you go. Look for Logan's coverage on that.
Other than that, NEB softball and Kalinowski Valley played Monday. Kalinowski Valley is just, they're a good team. They can just flat out hit. They get the better of NEB. Wyalusing softball has rallied all the way back to 500. They'll play Towanda today, too. They started, I think, 0-5 or 0-3, and they've since made it. They're 5-5 now.
Very Phillies-esque.
A little bit. Yeah.
So, and then other than that, I was at track at Canton for a little while yesterday. Athens and Canton and Wellsboro. I don't have major takeaways about that. I mean, you see them all year, and then we'll know more once all these teams start getting together for good. And,
right.
But we're getting down to it. I mean, there was a lot of invitationals last weekend and stuff like that. So we're getting down to it, and then the NTO invite will be here soon enough, and then postseason track, and then postseason baseball and softball.
Now is the time you really want to get out there and see some of this. The weather is turning, and now interconference play picks up. Games are getting closer because teams are figuring themselves out a little more. So,
as far as the NTL schedule goes, Thursday, tomorrow, we're taping Wednesday. Thursday, which will have already passed, pretty light. But if you're listening to this Friday morning, it's probably one of the most full schedules I've ever seen on the NTL calendar.
All right, get yourself a paper.
Have
a
lasagna invitational at Wyalusing, right?
That's 3.
Yeah.
It's 3 o'clock. That'll go all night.
Yeah.
Lasagna. I tried some last year.
Yeah.
They actually sell lasagna. Yeah,
just a quick shout out to the Athens Girls Track team. They seem to be dominating every meet they're at.
Okay.
So
they did last year too. They're very
really good.
Yeah, they have a lot of really good, well, they're distance running and sprint. They're set, and it just watch out for that, everybody.
Yeah, so everyone.
I think they're probably squarely on people's radars because I think they had, if I'm not mistaken, had like an undefeated record last year. Mm-hmm. Like they have.
Yeah.
Whether it's distance, whether it's sprints, they have somebody that can step up and get the job done.
The meet that you were at yesterday, they won. So there's 18 total events, track and field.
That's how that works.
Athens won 9 of the 18 events, and they won, and that's including 9 of the 11 races.
Wow.
So.
All right, so yeah.
While we're doing track shout-outs, I'll clean up. Canton's Kendall Kitchen, I think, has won the pole vault in every Canton track thing I've rounded up this year. So that's going to be a person to keep an eye on for when we get down to, like I said, NTL and Invitational, postseason. She's a good pole vaulter. And so, and I'm talking like a foot above the next closest person. So I don't know. I'm assuming she probably puts a lot of time into. That's a skill I'd imagine you have to put a lot of time in to get good at. So she's done that. And then over in Troy, the Troy's boys team has had a similar kind of run to Athens. The one I'll point out is Colin Loveland and Ben Warburton. It feels like in the long jump and the triple jump, they finish 1-2 pretty much every time. So,
and just the names for Athens girls, Sarah Bronson, incredible distance runner for them. She was even a state finalist at cross country this past year. And then there's Abby Burgess, who I think won all three sprints.
I think she won 100, 200, and 400. Yeah. I was talking to Matt Patton. He was down there yesterday, and he said we were talking about because I was going through results from last week, and it Bronson and I forget Lila Hughes plays for Northeast Bradford. Yeah. Ava Hughes had the exact same time. Well, I think it was the 3200, and he said, "Yeah, they go and you can see them laughing while they're doing it. They're just like that's their thing. They're good at distance running. So we're finally not having." In the gym days, game canceled days, and it's good because it needs to even out because the postseason, like I said, will be here in just a matter of weeks.
Yeah, we've rounded the corner. The sun's out. Get out and see some of these names and some of these teams we've talked about on this episode. And, of course, pick up a copy of the Morning Times, copy of the Daily Review. Subscribe if you haven't and get in on both Logan and David's coverage as we go down the stretch here. Let's transition to national sports scene. We start in the NBA playoffs. Got to start with Knicks Sixers as of today.
Well, one
go ahead, Logan.
One just quick note. Listeners of this podcast, I hope you've enjoyed it because this may be the last episode depending on how these next 10 minutes play out. Go ahead.
You're listening to this on a Friday. Game 3 has happened, but obviously we tape in the middle of the week, so a lot of this will be focused on game 2s, which were crazy in some ways and crazy in others. Let's start with Knicks Sixers. The Knicks are ahead 2-0. Not without some controversy. The NBA has since come out and said that the officials missed 2 calls, fouls on the Knicks on Tyrese Maxey. Game 3 is going to happen on Thursday. As someone who benefited from the calls and doesn't have much to complain about sitting here, I think it's only right that I kind of open up the round table to the Sixers guys.
I want to jump in before you guys
Oh, you're
going
to jump in before they can air their grievances?
And I'm sorry I keep jumping in, but... I have to let you two know, I was playing both sides of the fence Monday night. So I texted you after Maxey made that shot, The next sequence happened, and I was like, well, I can't text David about this, so I texted Kurt, and I was just like, holy Knicks!
Two very different reactions and worlds, I'm sure.
So, yeah, because it was after the long 3 from Maxey, and I was just like, Tyrese Maxey's cold.
You made the right call not texting me after that
I figured.
Let's get into the reaction from Game 2, and then we'll kind of work in how it affects the rest of the series, as by now you listeners have watched Game 3. So Sixers, Johnny and David. I almost did. We're talking Sixers, and I don't even get David right.
I'm the one who watches the
right
most.
reaction.
I haven't been super invested in the Sixers so far this year, so I wasn't like I wouldn't say I was incredibly bummed by what happened. Is at this point being a Sixers fan, it's kind of what you expect. On the same side, I don't know what basketball is anymore. I genuinely don't. I think the NBA has a genuine
officiating problem,
and it makes it very difficult to watch it as a whole. And it's just like, I'm just sitting there, I'm laughing like the Joker.
Right.
This is insane. I don't even know what I'm watching anymore.
What do you think, Dave, now you've had time for it to kind of settle down a little bit?
Well, I think the Sixers were justified with the frustrations considering the last 2-minute report. I could go a million different ways with this, which is why it's hard for me to like really figure out what I want to say. But it's just like, I really liked the Sixers' process of that game. I was there are moments and times where, yeah, they made a mistake or whatever, but it was such a better game plan than it was in game one. And everything about that game felt like, yeah, this series deserves to be 1-1. Tyrese Maxey announced his presence as a playoff player for the first time. That three that Logan immediately texted me after.
I said he was a cold man.
Yeah, that was the best moment of his career, and it was just completely taken away.
Were you upset that he handed it off to Embiid, though, at the end?
Yeah, no, he didn't handle that whole last stretch correctly. Like, I will admit, maybe...
And again, also, shout out Tyrese Maxey, most improved player of the year as absolutely. Of this week.
But, and again, like, I can see the arguments when it comes to the timeout situation. Like, people are like, maybe he shouldn't have been called, and I'll be biased to say that the timeout should have been called. But also, Kyle Lowry on the baseline, call the timeout. Don't just try to give it to Maxey. So I blame Lowry for that too. But Maxey was fouled, man.
Yeah, he was.
It would have. So I it just stinks because I. Game one.
Tape your hands to your sides.
Yeah,
mess with the mic.
He's getting worked up.
What's happening here is the wire keeps getting in my way. I'm trying to keep the mic in front of my face.
You're good.
But so game one, and I know we don't want to like totally recap this series.
Yeah, most people have watched.
But game one was like I could kind of live with that loss because that second quarter doomed the Sixers in that. The minute Embiid was out of the game, the Sixers didn't know what the heck they were doing. And then Embiid had that scary fall, which just made everything awful in that game. They had it. And then to the Knicks' credit, they just totally out-rebounded the Sixers. So it is what it is. Not a moment during game one was I upset with the officiating. Game two, the entire night, I thought there were a lot of weak calls. And then that happens at the end of the game. It's like, well, there's a jersey being held by Jalen Brunson. How is that not called? But everything else before that was called. So it just stinks. The series has all the feel of a 1-1 series.
Well, not that we were Nostradamus or anything. A lot of people had the same thoughts as we did. But last week, we kind of said this was going to be a dogfight.
And it has
And
been.
The first two games have been exactly as advertised. I don't think that's stopping. What did you think as an outsider with no dog in the fight?
So it goes back to before the last sequence, before the Maxey sequence that everybody has seen and talked about or heard about at this point. The last minute or so, it felt like the refs just said, we're going to let them do whatever they want to do out there. Because
which is totally inconsistent with the first 47 minutes.
And I watched the last 3 minutes. I was doing work and I got an alert on my phone. It said, this is a close game with 3 minutes left. That's when I turned it on. The final 2 minutes were semi-normal. And then that last minute, like you said, 40 seconds, it was just like you said, dogfight, and the refs were not going to let it be decided.
Yeah.
I say all that to say this. I don't like the 2-minute report because I feel like time and time again, the 2-minute report just comes out and tells everybody exactly what they thought they wanted to hear, which that's fine. And I get it. Officials need to be held accountable. There's got to be a better way than to just come out after the game's gone final, the result's been stood, and just say, oh, they got it wrong. Sorry.
Well, yeah, and it doesn't take into
account. They're not being held accountable.
That's what I mean.
Yeah. It also doesn't take into account what a lot of fans, not in this situation, but let's say another game where you want to say, oh, let them play, or oh, you need to tighten up a little bit. 2-minute report does not take any of that into account in terms of game flow. No,
it's a robotic look at what should have happened. And that was a loud
sound. Wow, it's got some serious wind going on.
And so,
or thunder. Some rain.
A train?
People don't like to hear it for professional referees, professional officials. They're human.
Yeah.
Human mistakes happen. And this is not me trying to bag on the Sixers. I was very mad at the Lakers Monday night. We'll get to that.
Yeah.
So I watched the last 40 seconds of the Sixers-Knicks game back. The Sixers were up 5, right? With about 32 seconds to play. So then that first timeout call from Nick Nurse, never should have got it because he was like, maybe I want a timeout.
I get that argument.
The first one never should have got it. The second one, you can argue, did he have possession of the ball?
I think the last 2-minute report said that he should have been granted that one.
Yeah. So, but then I took a look at the officials.
Yeah.
The two officials in the front court were watching 9 players of action. Your eyes are not going to gravitate towards the coach. The other guy was 40 feet down the court. That's pretty far away. So all that withheld. Maxey loses it. They don't call anything. They don't call travel. They don't call foul. The Knicks get it back. DiVincenzo takes the shot. He misses the shot. The rebound was right there. There's one player for the Sixers boxed out.
There's a big picture out there of all 4 Sixers standing around.
One player.
And I am not letting the Sixers off the hook in a sense because literally do one more thing right
and you win
the game.
Exactly.
But it's also just like, But you were also handed a foul that should have called.
That's fine.
Everything.
One Sixer boxed out.
Yeah.
Tobias Harris. He was the only Sixer that boxed out in that play.
I agree with what you're saying. It's just such a weird situation because it's such a scramble moment.
And so I agree with you with the you've been handed a foul. That's where it comes into me. Like, referees are human. They're going to make mistakes. They're going to miss calls. The Sixers, as an organization, as a team, had to realize we're the underdog. We're going into enemy territory. We're not, for whatever reason, that's how it happens, right? We're not going to get the favorable whistle.
That's also all about to flip in the next two games because of how much attention is now on the fouls. It's about to be a lot of calls Philadelphia's way in the next two games.
That may have aged very poorly because game three was just last night. Yeah, we'll see.
It'll be a terrible Sixers call to game three.
I set up our entire audience for that and then went right back to, oh, well, we'll see how the third game goes.
I just want to say what I told Kirk yesterday in that the Sixers, all the my anger toward the refs aside in that moment, the Sixers got not only Kawhi Leonard in it again, but Reggie Millard.
Oh, you just took my lead. I was just about to say from my Knicks point of view, we just did a lot of from the Celtics perspective, or 76ers perspective.
But right before that, I say the Kawhi Leonard situation because Jalen Brunson's three-pointer was, I don't know how that bounce went into the
I couldn't believe it.
Yeah,
I
never, like, you've got to kidding me.
Okay, so nobody boxes out.
Yeah.
But they leave DiVincenzo wide open on the three-point line. Kicked right back out to him. I wonder what that is.
Unreal unprofessionalism.
I know, right?
I'm not the only one that had this happen to me anymore.
It's probably like a coach trying to, like Logan trying to do his job.
It was my dad. I'll call him back. Nobody closed out to DiVincenzo. He hits the three to go up. So then, and this is, and I get it. It's the NBA. It's not fundamental basketball. If you're looking for fundamental basketball in the NBA, you're already wasting your time.
Right.
The word I wrote down comes down to effort for me. And that's because it's the same way. And we'll get to the Lakers, I'm sure. It was disgusting. They didn't have effort in the second half. Maxey gets the ball in the backcourt. He runs all the way up. Embiid sets a screen. He just got in the guy's way. But they didn't call anything, obviously. But then he never gets into the play. Maxey goes downhill, gets it blocked. There was one Sixer in the paint to four Knicks. They got the rebound. They got the free throws. So, to me, it comes down to effort at the closing seconds.
For Embiid's sake, for his argument, he can't move. So
he moves if he can't enough move, to score 30 plus.
That's my take, is if he can't move, then he shouldn't be out there.
I'm saying in that sprinting, scramble, whatever. You. But no, and you're saying effort. I don't necessarily disagree with anything you're saying. But the effort was there the entire game up until that point. Whereas game one, the Knicks totally out-rebounded them, and that's a big reason why the Sixers lost. It was like 44-44 in rebounding.
But it was 41-28 Knicks in the paint.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, like, I get it, the gripes with the officiating. It was a weird last couple of minutes, but it's the NBA playoffs. If you don't take maximum effort for 48 minutes, the Knicks are going to have it. They're just going to have it every night. So that's what it's going to take for the Sixers to get back in this series. I could not believe it. And then even the play for Maxey, you're attacking a 7-footer. Like, go somewhere else with the basketball. I get it, Maxey was your hottest player.
The Hartenstein block.
It's not uncommon for him to beat that every single time. So, like, why wouldn't he do something he's always been able to do? So, you know.
A Knicks perspective, obviously, I mean, the reports come out now. We've all talked about it at length. There was a foul. It was a no call. Fully admit. Glad I benefited from it, and I'm not on the other side.
You should be happy. I'm not going to say you shouldn't
what
be.
What was for me, though, like, I don't get as bogged down in the Sixers side of it because, for me, when that happened, it was all about the reverse Reggie Miller.
Yeah, no, I get
it. 8 points in 9 seconds in the 90s to crush the Knicks' souls. It was the exact opposite, and the Knicks essentially did it to another team, and it kind of felt, as a Knicks fan, a weight off the shoulders a little bit. It's like we've exercised the Reggie Miller's demons, and then, of course, it becomes a controversial foul call, and it quickly turns from just elated joy to, oh, man, now our 2-0 excitement has turned into
I don't want to say it's tainted for you, but it's like, well, it doesn't have the same weight because no one's going to give you
it's like the
100% credit for it.
It's a yeah, but. Yeah.
It's a yeah, but I still got to win 4 games to get to the next round. Yeah. So,
yeah, that being said, how many games is this?
I still say 7. Dave and I talked about this yesterday. I think we both would have said by 4 games in, this might be splitting each home 2-2. Mm-hmm. I think now we're looking at 2-0 Knicks, followed by 2-0 Sixers, and we're going to be back in lockstep for the 1-1-1.
I could have it wrong, but with the Pacers winning last night in Milwaukee, I think that was the first game a home team lost in the entire first round of the playoffs so far. Mm. Home teams have won every single game.
I will be very interested.
Well, and then Dallas won in L.A.
Okay, so Dallas and
Indianapolis.
The Pacers.
I do mean Indiana. When I say, though, and I'm not I'm not trying to be a conspiracy theorist. I am interested to see how the game is called in Philadelphia after all the attention on how the game was called in game two. You can't help but think it's either going to be not a lot of whistles at all, or it's in their place, just as it was in New York.
Yeah. I have a different.
I'll be interested to see what happens.
I have a different viewpoint of that because I just.
You believe the NBA hates the Sixers.
I don't know that I do.
It's in his Philadelphia blood.
It's backed up by statistics. I don't. So I'm just trying to say.
They hated the process. Like I'm not saying I actually believe it, but I just like part of me is worried that.
What does the NBA get out of removing the guy they named MVP last year from the playoffs?
Well, I mean that's fair.
What do they get out of that?
I don't know.
it's not real.
Yeah, what are the numbers?
That the Sixers have benefited. I think it was they benefited the least from controversial calls, or they have had the most bad calls against them all season.
I have no I think it's actually substance statistics. To say anything. I'm just worried about it.
It's just coming from a place of 0-2.
I have to look it up.
They basically kicked out Sam Hinkie off the team. Like the NBA was basically forcefully got Sam Hinkie out of the Sixers because of the whole process situation. And that was a whole conspiracy. I don't know. But
honestly,
you know,
if I was down 0-2 and one of them was because of a controversial no call, I would absolutely be on here banging the table going, this league hates us. I would be right in your boat, so I don't blame you.
The overarching thing, though, is it just stinks because, I do feel like this series still goes 6 or 7. I still think the Sixers could win the series. All right, there's no room. There's no room for any screw-ups now.
Let's go right to that. For our listeners, this will be a were they right or were they not moment. Who wins game 3?
Sixers.
Logan?
Knicks in a close one decided in the last 15 seconds.
I'm not showing up on the podcast
on a no
week.
Call.
I'll take Sixers.
All right, I'm going. I think the Knicks put their foot down.
Well, so here's my last thing before we get off this series is Brunson hasn't played well yet.
Nope,
and he's the Knicks' best player.
The leading scorer in game two was Josh Hart.
Also, Josh Hart has got to regress. So you know, take one with the other.
Embiid and Maxey.
Somebody helped Tyrese Maxey and Joel Embiid.
I was just about to say.
Tobias Harris was boxing out.
Embiid and Maxey both over 30
points.
Points department.
I was trying to say, the two best players on the Sixers was one had one leg and the other one was sick. It's kind of pitiful. The rest of the team doesn't show up.
Yeah, and both had 30-plus points in two games. Jalen Brunson for the Knicks has been terrible. Josh Hart is your leading scorer in game two, and somehow the Knicks are up 2-0.
So how's King James doing? Over on the West.
I don't want to talk about it.
Buzzer beater in game two of the Nuggets Lakers after the Lakers were up 20.
Thing. I watched the entire game.
Really? I did not. I haven't watched it all. So
Lakers up 20, undefeated when up 20 this season.
Not anymore. Go
up 20 and lose to a Jamal Murray buzzer beater.
First one ever in the playoff history of the Denver Nuggets.
And are now down 0-2 in what might be LeBron's last stand.
So this is just bad beats all over the place.
It's terrible.
For some of you guys. For some of us are sitting pretty, and this is my best pod yet.
I know Kirk never thought he would be sitting here saying, well, it's good to be a Knicks fan.
But anybody who listens knows that when we come back on the air next Wednesday, two more games will have happened, and it'll be 2-2, and I'll be right back into where I belong.
One more.
Pain, misery, suffering.
Okay.
One more Knicks fan. One more Knicks note. I really, really hate the New York Knicks. One, because of everything that's happened over the last week, but also
not
because...
Not a big Spike Lee guy?
I don't care about
him. I get it.
But I also... The fact that these are all Villanova guys is messing with my head. I hate it.
Yeah, but you got Kyle Lowry.
I know, I get
who
it.
Who had to be carried off the court.
Embiid threw him down. Did you see that replay?
I didn't know how he got hurt.
Embiid's launching balls behind his head halfway down the court in his feels. Kyle Lowry's getting picked up and carried off the court.
Going for that loose ball there at the end, Embiid literally grabbed Lowry at the shoulders and just threw him out of the play.
It's fitting as a former Villanova fan who's now a Villanova hater. Kyle Lowry was on a Villanova team that I liked, and all the other Villanova guys in this series are on the team that I hate.
Kyle Lowry's your third best player. Yeah, I don't know if that can win a championship.
Kelly Oubre and Buddy Hield needs to step up. I don't want to talk about the Lakers.
We don't have to. Would you want James Harden in this series? Okay. I wondered if we reached that point of bargaining yet.
No.
Lakers played a great game. Played a great first half. I think we're up by 15 points at halftime. I'm at the office. I'm doing pages for the night. I get a text from one of my best friends from back home. Lakers are playing great, only to lose by 10. And I said, bro, stop. I will cry. Okay. Because they just got beat Saturday night. They went into the half 3 points ahead. LeBron made a deep three to take the lead going into the locker room. They just didn't have it in the third quarter. The Nuggets did. The Nuggets went on to win that game comfortably. Same old script. Nuggets chipped away, chipped away, chipped away, chipped away. Lakers went ice cold, ice cold, ice cold. Then down the stretch, they got it within a couple points. LeBron makes two crazy threes to put the lead back to 6 or 8. It's like 89-81. Nothing much else happens. Nuggets keep on coming back, keep on coming back, keep on coming back. So then it gets down to the final seconds. LeBron goes around the screen. Defender falls. Wide open three. Clanks off the iron. Nuggets play it out. Jamal Murray over Anthony Davis for the win, the first game winner. And the Nuggets have now won 10 straight games.
Second half decision to single cover Nikola Jokic. What on earth is that decision? And then he just dominated.
It doesn't matter how you try to defend him. He's going to figure it out. But
that's where the 20 breaks down. Like, they double covered in the whole first half. They come out, make the adjustment. We'll just put Anthony Davis on, and they just go to work.
So the bigger thing about the Lakers this year is since they went to a certain lineup, I forget what the date is, but they're like the third best offensive team in the NBA. They win games with their offense this year, not their defense. And so, but the problem is their, I keep seeing numbers about it. Their play offense, when they were running plays, had like a very high expected points average, which is very good. And then when they were just freelancing, go out there and figure something out, terrible. And that's what lost them the game. That's what allowed the Nuggets to creep back, because they just, and Anthony Davis came out and said after the game, we have like 7 minute stretches where we just don't look like we know what we're doing on either end out there. And that's exactly what happened in the second game. LeBron in the first half of the last two games has looked like a 28-year-old man. It's been amazing to watch. Then in the last 4 minutes, looks like he's about 58. It's just, I think the Nuggets are going to sweep this series. Hopefully the Lakers get one. But the Nuggets are just, they're just too good. And now they're in the Lakers' head, because the Lakers blew a 20-point lead, and then they're going to come out after the game talking about a missed call in the third quarter.
What was LeBron's thing? What's the point of the replay center?
Yeah. So, I don't know. I mean, I'm going to watch the next games as able, but the Nuggets are just good. They're very, very good. They could easily be back in the NBA Finals.
Jokic is always the centerpiece of whenever you talk Nuggets basketball. When it's playoff time, Jamal Murray might be the most underrated player.
He's
in the
highest step up in points from regular season to the playoffs of any player ever.
And that dude gets going, I mean, and he just makes big shots. So you're going, you think sweep?
I'm scared it could happen.
I think it'd be a gentleman's sweep.
I say sweep.
I got my Nuggets friends in my mentions after every game, especially after that one.
When you lose like that, that's tough.
It was right as I finished up work. It was I finished work and it was the last 40 seconds of the game. I was like, okay, maybe it's going to go to OT. I'll watch this. I almost slept in the office because I just didn't want to move. I slept right there in my chair. I was like, I guess I have to go home. It was brutal. Yeah.
David came in on Monday or on Tuesday and he made like one quick joke. And so I was like, oh, okay, we'll joke around. And I said something just back like, oh, Maxie pushed off anyways, and David went crazy.
Okay, that's a little bit of an overstatement.
I'm like, all right, maybe not.
But the blood was boiling a little bit for about 10 minutes.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Regarding the Maxie push off thing, when you showed me the video, I genuinely did not see it. I couldn't see it. And then I saw it an hour later when I was back at my apartment. I was looking at the wrong part of the video. I was looking at parts, and I wasn't looking at...
I think you were seeing less red.
I was looking at the wrong Nick, and I saw then the last 2 minute report comes out and says it was marginal and it wasn't.
Yeah. It didn't affect anything.
I hate that word, marginal contact.
I fear
the Lakers might be cooked. Denver's just that good. They just are. Anthony Davis also came out before that game and said, I'll never win Defensive Player of the Year. The league doesn't want to give it to me. And then he gets the game winner hit over.
In a much tougher spot than we are. I mean, Sixers and Knicks are pretty evenly matched, and we think it's going 7. You're playing the defending NBA champions with the best player in the world.
Beaten the Lakers 10 straight times.
And that's exactly why I'm not as down about the Sixers chances as Logan is about the Lakers.
Because you could be a Lakers fan.
Well, because I... Well, you have a lot more championships than I do.
I was going to say, I'm like, oh, man, Lakers fan trying poverty is something else.
But I liked... the Sixers...
It's a tough time right now.
I like I said earlier, I like the Sixers' process in Game 2 that if they can...
Yeah. Just,
if they can do that at home...
So you'd say you trusted it?
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Other series going on.
Yeah, what
Has
do we
anybody
got?
Watched any of the Magic...
nope.
Cavs series,
the Magic are in the playoffs. Yeah, no.
I've tried
Orlando
to catch
Magic.
Ann Edwards Orlando a little bit Magic. With the Wolves.
Oh, killer, stone cold.
I'm
killer.
More. My bigger takeaway is this is a catastrophe for the Suns.
Oh, it has to be get blown up. It just does.
It's another Durant team that has to get blown up.
It just has to get blown up. They tried to string it together.
Like, where is he going next?
I don't know. But
back to Oklahoma City.
They don't have a point guard. Beal has not been what Beal was supposed to be brought
no,
in to be.
Beal's been a disappointment.
Yeah. Booker has regressed from what he used to be.
Oh, they're just not that good.
No, they're just they're not that good.
Timberwolves are dangerous.
Edwards.
He's dangerous.
He's going to be the face of this league. If he's not there by next year.
I'd like everyone to settle down in the MJ talk.
He does kind of look like it.
But he kind of plays a little like early MJ too. But we'll see where that goes.
Here's an honest question. I haven't heard a single thing about the Oklahoma City Thunder.
They played a good game with the Pelicans. I think their second game's tonight.
They're just they haven't got to game two.
They played a Sunday night. They played a good game because the Celtics and the Heat haven't played
down to
either.
The wire.
Yeah, it was a great game in the fact that it was so ugly. It was like 89-89 for like a 2.5 minute stretch late in the fourth and just brick.
I will say playoff basketball is a lot uglier, but I do kind of like the lower scoring.
Yeah, like I just like I'm coming down to the wire.
89-89 is still too low for this era.
No Zion.
I remember like a 2005 playoff game that was 69-64 final. It's like the Pistons versus somebody.
I just found it interesting that the Thunder went down to the wire with the Pelicans team minus Zion.
Yeah.
That Pelicans team has guys.
Keep an eye on that.
They have guys.
Yep.
And again, that's a number one seeded Thunder that's young.
What?
Yeah.
Say that word again.
It came out
weird. Okay.
I like it. What year did the Knicks play the Spurs in the finals? 99?
That sounds right.
Yeah, that's
that was our first Spurs.
Charles Sprewell?
Sprewell, Allen Houston. Yeah.
I watched
Charlie Ward.
I watched that on NBA TV a long while back, but it sticks out in my mind because it was the ugliest version of NBA basketball
Marcus
I've
Camby.
Ever seen in my life.
The Camby
it
man.
It was brutal to watch compared to today's game. Yeah. So I know the scores are higher than they've ever been. It is obviously coming down a little bit for the playoffs.
You need a middle ground.
I kind of miss when mid-range was normal and more popular.
Celtics cruised. I think that game two is just getting going.
That stinks. The storyline of Jimmy Butler playing the Celtics again after last year's series, but now he's not playing, so it just kind of ruined the whole.
Bucks Pacers could be upset city.
Giannis hasn't played yet.
Yeah, and Chris Middleton got hurt.
Maybe we'll have played by game three.
I didn't do a bracket or anything like that, but I would have picked the Pacers as my upset pick.
Mm. I forgot Pascal Siakam was on that team.
Yeah.
Sounds like you don't even. Ooh. Spicy P.
The Raptors team.
Great game Tuesday night.
Interesting. Yeah, I forgot about Siakam since
who else is out there? The Clippers and the Mavs tied 1-1, and that's just that series is
going
to go 7.
Yep, that one's going 7.
Luka,
still don't know who I want coming out of that one.
Luka was awesome last night.
Yeah, he had a sick bounce pass that
like
it was in the press break.
Did you see Kyrie's catching behind the back?
Yes.
They might have the most fun.
They're fun.
Duo
they're fun
out there.
You got one more thing, David?
I was just gonna say I'm anti James Harden, so go Mavs.
Okay, let's really quickly do MLB.
David rooting for a Texas team.
Yeah, because we got
Jackson
a lot.
Holiday got his second hit.
Yeah,
we got really.
He's two hits.
Okay,
got to get ahead of that.
0.059
is his batting average. At one point, I saw he was 1-for-25 with 15 strikeouts.
I think he got up to 1-for-33.
What do you do?
Let him work his way out of it. The Orioles are winning. Ready. If the Orioles were losing and he was playing terrible, that's one thing, right?
No way he gets sent back down.
To me, in my mind, that would be so much... And I don't know him. I'm not going to pretend like I know his psyche or anything like that. But that would be so much more devastating to get called up, be up for a month, and go straight back down as the number one prospect, a 20-year-old, than to just figure it out while you have a bunch of guys around you who are close to your same age and playing really, really well right now.
Yeah.
So I think it'll get figured out. I think being sent down would be a problem.
Yankees and Phils, very similar seasons. Yankees 16-8, Phillies 15-9. Not much has changed for me in the last week. I love where the Yankees are at considering no Gerrit Cole, and it looks like the lineup they've put together is going to work, especially with Juan Soto playing how he is, MVP caliber season. It looks like Phillies have kind of rebounded with a couple nice series. A
couple easy series.
Yeah.
Well, how you guys feel? I mean, I take everything with a grain of salt.
Yeah, they have. I know you have them as having similar seasons, but the quality of opponents have been very different.
Sure.
For the Yankees.
It's not even that. It's just the way they've gotten to within one game of each other. The Phillies were 500 a week and a half ago, and now they were seven games above 500 before yesterday's end of the winning streak. But yeah, no, I mean, you take everything with a grain of salt against the Rockies and White Sox, but
still April too.
You know, you did what you were supposed to do.
You did what you're supposed to do. And I know you're still fairly new to the whole Phillies thing, Johnny. They have a history of not playing well against the bad teams. So this is nice. Yes.
I mean, like,
you play your schedule too.
I'm a sports fan. I get playing down to your opponent. Trust me.
Yeah.
No, but yeah, I'm still having fun watching. I'm watching them. I'm choosing to watch Phillies over basketball most nights at this point. It's kind of nuts, but
Ranger Suarez is on a big tear or something.
25 scoreless innings in a row.
Yeah okay.
He
yeah,
is Rangers, awesome.
Rangers going off right now. It's April.
Your seat feeling warm over there?
Yeah.
Orioles only half game back.
Yeah.
It's going to be the back and forth we do all year.
Yeah, your number one prospect looks really good, too.
Yeah. Oh, wait. I actually pulled that. So this got sent to me yesterday. MLB rookie career starts. Willie Mays, 1-for-26.
Oh.
Brooks Robinson, 2-for-22. George Brett, 2-for-25. Cal Ripken Jr., 3-for-33. Ken Griffey Jr., 1-for-18. The math says he's probably going to figure it out, and this will all probably just
Aaron Judge, 50 home runs.
And
rookie year.
So he's like 36 in his just sixth
saying.
Year.
Just saying, you forgot that part. 50 home runs.
This whole holiday
rookie
thing,
of the year.
This whole holiday thing has reminded me of Rhys Hoskins. And Holiday is a much better prospect. It will be a much better player than Hoskins will ever be. But Hoskins was the big prospect that was called up for the Phillies in 2017 that everybody was excited about. He was like 0-for-22 and then ripped off 17 home runs in 20 games. It was so like it can flip on a dime.
One thing we haven't mentioned yet, and I don't know how long ago this happened, but the Aaron Boone ejection.
Yeah, I was going to mention it too.
I need your take on it, Kirk.
The biggest take is the umpire's response where he said,
"Horrible!
I don't care who said it, you're out. You don't care who's saying something, you're ejecting the head. What are we talking about?
Also, two pitches into a game. The game just started.
And all the fans said was, come on, home plate.
Let's go, home plate.
That's the quote. That's what
sound
he got.
Bite that.
That's what they booted Boone for. And then the response was, I don't care who said it, you're out. This is just, it's
then
just
they lost, right? 2-0 to the Athletics.
They lost.
It's ump shows, it's ref shows, it's all across the board in every sport. Settle down, take yourself out of it. You're not supposed to affect the game this much.
That was a joke I made when I walked into the building yesterday. It's like, he was the worst official in New York City, the NBA or the Yankees game.
I do love it, though. The Yankees hate just means we're so back. you can feel it. You can feel people hating the Yankees again.
I felt bad for the Yankees in that spot.
It makes me so happy. Oh, I love being in this seat.
I'll check back in on this in September.
Yeah, you'll check back in when we're World Series champions.
Count the rings, 27 of them.
All right.
I really need
Jackson Holliday to go off now. I will become
He's not going off.
Wait till he gets to that silly little short porch in Yankee Stadium.
I know
he is going off to AAA.
I know the Orioles are very much in play for a World Series appearance this year, but like so are all three of us. Phillies Yankees World Series would be freaking electric here.
It's on pace. Could happen.
It's April.
It's very April. Yeah.
I said that to Johnny earlier today. I was like, we're not even to May.
Like, we're talking about this. We're talking about that. It's April.
But what April does mean is the NFL draft. I think the easiest way to cruise through this is to just start first with our own teams and what we need and what we think will happen. Let's start with Cowboys, who are all in.
Signed a running back last week.
I repeat, they are all in.
We are all in. Didn't you hear Jerry yesterday?
Royce Freeman.
Yeah. Did you hear Jerry yesterday? All in.
Deuce McVaughn.
He said it again.
Deuce Vaughn.
Deuce McVaughn.
Might as well be McVaughn. Deuce Vaughn.
Yeah, we got him at the bottom of
Deuce
happy
McBride
meal.
From the Knicks. That's what you mix it up with.
Yeah, Deuce. 20-point game in game one.
We're getting our players at the bottom of a Happy Meal bag. It's just
so they were all in on the offseason. Turns out
we're all in on this draft.
That wasn't true. Now they're all in, according to Jerry, this week on the draft.
Does he seriously keep saying the words
all in? Was it a press conference?
How can he be all in on a draft? You have your pick.
I don't know.
So tell us what'll happen. First round.
I'm not even going to make it. Well, by the time everybody's hearing this, we would have already made our pick.
Yes.
So I would, I don't know
what
we're going
to do.
You're going
to trade away all your picks on the first day.
That would be fine. I don't care. This is the least I've ever cared about a Dallas Cowboys draft. The least I've ever cared because the ownership doesn't care. So therefore, why should I care? I see us going offensive line or a wide receiver.
Okay. Logan, the Baltimore Ravens, first round.
Yeah, who'd you guys pick last night?
To my chagrin, I watched the whole draft, and the Ravens traded into the second round as soon as they got on the clock. That's what happened.
Were you happy with what they got, though?
Yeah, I mean, another second. The Ravens picked up another second. They got another second, probably a fourth, maybe a seventh next year. So I'll take it. I mean, you can't ask for much more.
David, who did your Philadelphia Eagles end up last?
I've read nothing about this draft that's coming up / yesterday.
What do you guys
what do your team needs?
What do you guys need? Yeah.
Quarterback, linebacker. It's got to be one of those teams.
Quarterback.
I guess edge rusher might be in there too. But
so you're looking at defense.
You said quarterback?
Oh, wow.
Adonai Mitchell, dream pick, I think, for the Ravens at third A. Third A. Nobody can talk on this podcast today.
This is a struggle.
I was terrible during the high school segment.
Adonai Mitchell at 30 would be a dream scenario. I think he's epic.
I think if the Bills don't move, that's who's going to Buffalo is Adonai Mitchell. But I'm going to say just for fun, the Bills trade up and Roma Dunze is a Buffalo Bill today, baby.
How do you feel about Roma Dunze?
I think Roma Dunze is the best player in the draft.
Over Marvin Harrison.
He will be the last jersey I ever buy. Whoever he is drafted to will be my next purchase. That jersey, it will be my last purchase. And I believe he is a franchise-changing player that will someday be first-team All-Pro and have a Super Bowl.
What if he's a Patriot?
Then I think he stinks, and I don't think he will amount to crap.
That was good.
But that's where I stand on Roma Dunze.
I think this is a good thing. We could. How many quarterbacks get drafted round one Thursday night? Six quarterbacks in round one.
It's gonna be the top four, right?
At least okay. At least three are gonna go on the first three picks, probably.
JJ McCarthy will go in the first round.
Which is odd, but you know.
Yeah, let me throw this out to the group. Am I the only one who likes Penix more than JJ McCarthy?
Nope. I'm with you. I think Penix is better.
I think Penix has a higher ceiling for sure. I'm not saying he's not a project, but I think he's better than McCarthy.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I think McCarthy is better set to have more success in the league because Penix is so dependent on where he ends up.
All right.
That's fair.
So with that said, what landing spot, if you're a quarterback, sets you up for the most success? Right off my head, I think it's Bears and Vikings.
That's what I was going to say. I've heard Minnesota.
Yeah, I think on paper, again, Bears are always an on-paper type of team because we have been tooting their horn for 2 years now, and they have yet to show up with it. Yeah.
Let's say the Bears with one go Caleb Williams and with nine go Adunze. That's most of the mocks. This is your Bears offense. Caleb Williams, DeAndre Swift, DJ Moore, Keenan Allen, Roma Dunze, Cole Kmet.
That's nasty.
Pretty good to be a quarterback going to that
team.
And
I mean, there's a very strong chance that doesn't really work right off the bat because everyone's young and all that. But like, if you have that kind of core for a few years, that has to age.
So now let's say if you're JJ McCarthy and you go to the Vikings, JJ McCarthy, Aaron Jones, Justin Jefferson, KJ Addison, or excuse me, Jordan Addison, TJ Hockenson. Yep. Not. Terrible.
KJ Osborne, if he's
and KJ Osborne.
I think Osborne's gone.
He might be gone.
I think that's where the KJ. Gone. Jordan Addison, Justin Jefferson.
Yeah. Addison stepped up.
Hockenson, Aaron Jones. Pretty good landing spot. Commanders, no. Patriots, I say no.
No, they're real.
That leaves the Broncos as another potential quarterback team.
No.
What about the Giants?
I think Sean Payton is bad for this version of the NFL.
Okay.
I don't disagree with you, but do you think that he's going to grab a quarterback to ruin?
They might. I don't think that they'll be set up for success because I think Payton can't take his hands off the wheel, so to speak.
Raiders? Yeah. Devontae Adams?
Yeah, but no Josh Jacobs anymore.
No Jacobs.
No Hunter Renfro.
I think it's the Bears and Vikings. And then there's the oddball that you NFC East guys can speak to. I don't know what the Giants are planning.
Yeah, so. I think the Giants will take. Well, it happened last night. They either took a wide receiver or they traded back.
Okay.
After 4, 5, and 6 are big trade.
I cannot believe the Giants traded up just to get Bo Nix. It was crazy. I cannot believe my eyes watching.
All right, best career and biggest bust prediction.
Who's gonna be the biggest bust? I say JJ McCarthy.
Because if last night somebody traded up for JJ McCarthy. He's the bust. I will eat up way too much.
I'll eat my words if the Vikings pick him because I think they're just set up well. But if he ends up like he's a giant or
if it's not him, then whoever the Commanders drafted.
Who?
Jaden Daniels.
Okay. Not going to be the next Lamar?
I don't think so.
No, Caleb Williams is the next Lamar, Josh Allen, and Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, so that's all taken. But he just, don't get me wrong, he won a Heisman, but he's built like a rookie Lamar.
Yeah.
He flew up draft boards super quick, and like Johnny said, if he goes to the Commanders, we've seen this movie before. Robert Griffin III. They traded the farm to get the second pick to get Robert Griffin III.
Yeah.
They ruined him in one season. I know it's a brand new regime. They still don't have a new field. They still don't have a new stadium. They still have not done enough to get back. So I think I could be completely wrong and I'd be fine with that because he seems like he's going to be an electric NFL player if things go right. But I feel like the path is also there for him to not have things go right.
David?
Biggest bust? Craig May, I think.
Okay.
I don't have reasons for this current segment because I just haven't really focused on the NFL draft stuff. But I don't know. Drake May was good. I just keep getting Mitch Trubisky in my head because that's also another North Carolina quarterback.
And Sam Howell.
Sam Howell, yeah. Damn.
They haven't exactly panned out.
Yeah.
Best career?
Joe Alt. The tackle.
I saw someone said something like Joe Alt's gonna be that guy draft.
You picked the safest option.
But that's probably who will have the best career.
He's right. Someone said you're gonna wake up 10 years from now and Joe Alt will have just had a very great career making sure your quarterback never got touched.
Yeah,
he had
seven all pros.
Yeah. Six first team all pro seasons, yeah.
Those are those type of guys. I agree. I think it's gonna be Caleb Williams.
You think it's gonna be Robert Dudze?
I was going to say, how's it not rolling?
Well, I've already used it, so I don't want to keep regurgitating the same thing. I think Caleb Williams, given what the Bears have done, and that if he is even close to the generational guy they say, with what they've done, he's set up to be good for the next decade.
I wouldn't call Caleb Williams, I would not even consider him in my bust conversation, but I think it's going to be hard for him to live up to the expectations that he has.
Set pretty high.
Yeah, they're pretty high. I like... Just to be different, Marvin Harrison Jr.
Yeah,
that was who I was going to say.
Yeah. Harrison Jr. I see it. Heck of a receiving class.
He was incredible in college. Class. He has the genes.
So I am not sure I want the Bills to even try to move up because this receiving class is so deep. You might end up with a heck of a career type of player in the 20s.
Yeah, and then the expectations
are lower. Ladd McConkey, are you feeling good?
No.
You want a guy named Ladd?
I don't think so. Ladd McConkey, Georgia Bulldog.
I love that name.
Brock Bowers could be the big bust.
Yeah, I'm not sold on a top 10 consensus tight end.
That's tough. Tough position to do it.
Last night I did that was Kyle Pitts. And
I've seen a couple of Eagles people say how much they want Brock Bowers. I mean,
if he drops to you guys at 20-something, sure, that's a great pick.
I guess, but I mean, I know he was good in college, but I don't know. I just don't.
Most people,
Last couple things, then we'll get everyone out of here. I know we've gone long. Reggie Bush gets his Heisman Trophy back. Good.
Yes.
Good for him.
Finally.
Yeah, good for him.
Well, the Heisman Trophy Twitter account got in some trouble for saying rest in peace to O.J. Simpson. People were like, you're saying rest in peace to O.J. Simpson, but you won't get Reggie Bush your Heisman back?
There's a moral disconnect here.
So maybe the Heisman Trophy's like, oh, okay, we might as well just get Reggie his trophy back.
It was due. Look at college athletics today.
All-time.
Look at college athletics today.
Yeah. All-time electric college football player.
Yeah, no, the reason why he has his trophy back is because of the current state of college sports.
And then just some Pennsylvania local news. Steelers don't pick up Justin Fields' option, which means both Fields and Wilson will both be on one-year prove-it deals this season.
The Steelers have played this so well from a, I guess, a logistical standpoint. No, Fields and Wilson could both be bad, but the way they've planned it out money-wise, they got Denver to pay most of Wilson's money.
Oh, it's low risk, highest
reward.
That's
what I mean. This is such an intelligent, smart move to find out to get two guys, two starting quality quarterbacks on prove-it deals.
For the 2024-2025 NFL season in Week 12, who is starting for the Pittsburgh Steelers?
Well, that's what I was going to say. Is like I get that I understand the Steelers are smart with what they're doing here, but who? Like if you have 2 1-year prove it deals, who the heck is playing?
That's what I was kind of thinking looking at it is Wilson's going to be the starter probably, right? Yeah. So Fields is going to prove what? That he can be a good backup?
It's not necessarily a bad thing for the Steelers.
Well, Wilson will probably start the season as a starter.
look and remember, for him to they fall don't off Wilson week anything.
4-6.
Well, yeah. What I was also going to say is it makes no sense for them to pick up Fields as option because they're not the team that drafted him.
Yeah, so it's so low risk. It's like, okay, maybe neither of them pan out. Oh, well, he didn't cost you anything. I mean, you probably wasted a year of Tomlin's career.
And
but
Tomlin
whatever.
Misses his, goes below 500 for the first time. And
maybe.
Could be. Logan would like that. All right, that's
I mean,
all.
I would, too.
That's all for this episode. Please get out and support your community. A lot of sports picking up with the sunshine going now. Of course, get out, get a copy of Morning Times, copy of the Daily Review, subscribe if you haven't, and keep following Logan and David's stuff. A lot of great coverage to come here down the stretch. And we'll have a lot more updates next week. We'll see you Wednesday.